And your new favorite radio show is back. It's the Kaufman Show live on TSN 690. I'm Dave. That's Jay. And we're here to entertain you.
How are you, Dave?
I'm great, man.
Good.
I'm great. I'm just watched a classic basketball game.
Yes.
Not going to lie, that was the maybe the second or third game of this tournament that I watched in its entirety.
Yeah.
There's, it coincided with the World Baseball Classic. It coincides with the National Hockey League season. And not usually my cup of tea. This one was for the ages.
Always like March Madness.
Well, it's
I'm not a basketball guy per se, but there's something about it. I don't know. Those guys rolling around on the court, you know, they're giving it their all. And you could see they're exhausted, their hands on their knees at the end when they're taking free throws.
They are students.
Yeah.
They are kids.
Not getting paid.
And there's something wonderful about that. Exactly.
There is. There's something pure about it.
That they will all be at class at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. That they were studying at halftime. These are all, you know, the mark of a champion.
Yep, and they give it their all.
And it was a heck of a game. I can't wait to break it down with the coach, Pete Yiannopoulos, in about 10 minutes time, the TSN 690 and LDS Hoops analyst. Eric Thomas is here as well. He will help us break it down.
We'll need it.
Yes.
We'll need the help.
The man knows his NCAA basketball. He hosted the pregame show before the match, before the final tonight, and was telling the audience that he was actually at the Georgia Dome the last time there was a final played there. That must have been something, Eric.
Not the last time, because the last time was 07, but two times ago at the Georgia Dome back in 2002, yeah. I was there the night that the University of Maryland defeated Indiana to win the national championship, and the atmosphere in any place like this, when you have that many people jam-packed in and everybody's going crazy as both sides were either rooting for Louisville or Michigan, there were no separatist fans or anybody on the outskirts. You get swept up in it, and you end up cheering for a team because of the atmosphere.
No separatist fans, really. Not one Quebecer made it all the way down to watch the game today. I'm shocked.
Not one Quebecer with political ambition made it down to the Georgia Dome today.
Well, you know, I don't think the Georgia, if it was played in Texas, there might have been some secessionists, but I don't know what the deal is with Georgia. I think they are happily in the Union right now. One of the things that we will get to with Pete and with Eric, and funnily enough, it sort of transcended all sports tonight. Time to have that robot ump, robot ref conversation again. There was a moment in tonight's game where, and as I look over Eric's shoulder there, the tradition of putting the ladder up by the net and cutting off the netting, and really one of the most iconic moments in sports.
As Al Pacino looks on from the from center court.
I think you mean Rick Pitino.
I do.
But yeah, he looks a bit like Al Pacino right now. I had commented earlier on Twitter, I'm at the Kaufman Show, Jay's at J-Pub Radio. I find he looks a bit like Liza Minnelli.
I saw that. I was trying to figure it out. I just couldn't. I looked at his picture and I'm like, "What do you got?" And that was it. You know.
I feel like Pacino and Minnelli had a baby, and he just got elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Our congrats to Rick Pitino, and I guess he wasn't going to lose today off the announcement that he's going to the Hall of Fame in Springfield. Boston Celtics fans, be damned. Now there was, of course, there was this incredible block with, I don't know, Eric, 9 minutes left in the game.
I think a little less than that. Yeah, at a very crucial moment in the game, Trey Burke goes up, blocks Peyton Siva on what is one of the cleanest blocks I've ever seen. And for whatever reason, the refs tonight they were quick on the whistle. They didn't let it play out. And there's a GIF rotating around now that if you happen to see it's perfect. It's picture perfect. You couldn't ask for anything more out of a block. And the referees whistled it. And I think that happened one too many times tonight. But it's unfortunate that Michigan is on the losing end.
I saw that GIF and I was trying to see down low. Maybe if something happened down low.
Nothing.
And he didn't touch the board either.
No.
Nothing happened.
Nothing.
It was a beautiful block. And it was very impressive that Tim Donaghy was in more than one place tonight, because he was behind the plate in Texas when Joe Nathan threw a very outside ball to strike out Ben Zobrist. Zobrist with the bat on his shoulder. I'm watching that GIF on my computer screen right now to give Texas the win. Zobrist, one of Tampa Bay's best hitters. They had a runner on in scoring position. They were right in this game. And the people of Tampa Bay are not happy.
Oh.
I'd make a comment about how many there are, but we'll get into that tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about Tampa Bay tonight on the program. They've been in the news in this town of late. We'll speak with a gentleman by the name of Noah Pransky in about 20 minutes' time. Noah is an investigative journalist with the CBS affiliate in Tampa Bay. He's also a huge baseball fan, and he wrote a blog post that basically says that it's premature to discuss Tampa moving to Montreal or anywhere else. So we'll get into that with Noah in a little bit of time, but I think it's interesting for you know, people that are caught up, myself included, in the Montreal baseball revival right now. And the last month has been wonderful. I have never been as happy to be a fan of baseball in this city. I have hope once again. But speaking with Noah, you'll get the impression that things aren't as bleak as it seems in Tampa Bay. But right now, I think Joe Maddon's about to get a huge fine because he sent out a very undiplomatic tweet.
Uh-oh.
That, yes, he wrote, "That can't happen in a major league game." Whereas the Rays, the actual Tampa Twitter account, wrote, at the least, that was debatable. I guess we'll know what the conversation will be at the water cooler tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're absolutely right. The conversation tomorrow at the water cooler will be about Trey Burke and the block. Unfortunately, Game 6 of the Major League Baseball season doesn't quite resonate in the way that the NCAA Finals does. So
I'm just seeing that gif, though. It's very low and very outside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bob Uecker couldn't save that with a call. That's a bad one. It's a bad one. And we'll get into that tonight. We'll talk a little bit of baseball with Noah Pransky. We'll talk. Oh, we got Van Guy back, Jay. The comedic stylings of Henny Youngman. Take my wife,
is
please.
He? All right.
I take my wife everywhere, but she finds her way home.
Get the drum roll right.
I was going to say, Jimmy. Badooch.
Yeah.
How are you, Jimmy?
Gentlemen, I'm doing very well.
Doing well, good. Happy to hear. Nice to see you. You're wearing the England jersey today. You took off the Germany kit,
yes.
And you're rocking the England kit now.
Because you were making fun of me 2 weeks ago when I had my black Germany.
Is this in honor of Baroness Thatcher passing away?
Of course, definitely.
You were a big Margaret Thatcher fan?
No, but of course I do respect the fact that she was the first female leader in the Western world.
Yeah, but don't call her a feminist. She hated the word. She hated feminism. She hated feminism. She hated the downtrodden, the working class. She
passed out while giving speeches.
I don't know if she called Nelson Mandela a terrorist or if she called the ANC a terrorist group.
Yeah.
But I don't know. An interesting debate today with watching the media outpour and the public outpouring, both good and bad, off the passing of Margaret Thatcher, which leads to the debate of when is it appropriate to comment perhaps negatively when someone passes away.
Right away.
I agree.
Right away.
But you saw a lot of
because
people
they're
saying,
in the news.
Well, I agree.
And if you're going to discuss it and you're going to praise a person, you also have to point out their faults as well, don't you?
They were partying in England tonight.
They were having a party?
They were having a party in England tonight.
Because somebody died?
Because
I wouldn't go have a party. I'd debate, you know, the pros and cons of Margaret Thatcher's career, but I wouldn't go out and have a beer.
I think a lot of people are a lot worse off because of her policies. And we're seeing that, the reaction today and it was interesting seeing Billy Bragg comment, and he was on As It Happens earlier. It was a fascinating interview. Talking about it's time to maybe, instead of getting upset and having a beer or throwing a party at the bottom of a coal mine, time to get organized.
Mm-hmm.
Time to get organized and not let people like that take control, maybe. We'll see. Things are hunky-dory in Canada, though. We got nothing to worry about, right?
Not right now.
No? We're okay?
That could change.
Could it?
Very quickly.
Yeah?
Yeah. It has before.
Speaking of GIFs.
Don't get comfortable.
Did you see the Justin Trudeau GIF over the weekend?
I did not.
Of him.
Who's he fighting now?
He's dancing with his wife backstage before his speech. Big speech at the leadership convention this
Everybody
weekend.
Has their way of warming up.
It looks like the Travolta Uma Thurman, it was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished him well. It totally looked like the scene in Pulp Fiction.
Cool.
Yeah, you could see the Pierre did truly love the Mademoiselle.
Did they go back to Ving Rhames' place and overdose after that?
I've never heard it pronounced that way, Ving Rhames.
Yes, Ving Rhames.
I thought it was Ving Rhames.
I say Rhames.
And I say Rames.
Yeah.
Let's call the whole thing off,
yes.
Jay. We've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to be back right after the break. Break down the NCAA final. Look at that Georgia Dome all full. That is an incredible sight to see. Sure different than
another dome stadium that we know about?
No, I'm picturing an Atlanta Falcons game half full.
Oh, yeah.
It's impressive to see. Impressive to see. See that? We can talk basketball. We're going to prove it to you in a couple of minutes with the coach, Pete Yiannopoulos.
I love this song.
And Eric Thomas to help us out on the Kaufman Show. Yeah, welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Yeah.
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 That's right. Jay, you've got the nostalgic vibe tonight.
Yeah.
You're liking the old school music, aren't you?
I love it.
All right.
I love it. Right up my alley.
Good. Good. We'll keep the good times rolling here on the Kaufman Show.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are about to welcome in our first guest of the evening. Former UMass assistant basketball coach, currently the guru for NCAA basketball, and I will say also NBA basketball in this town. You can catch him on RDS, speaking en français. You can catch him on TSN 690, speaking the language of the kings. And here he is right now, Pete Yiannopoulos. Hello, sir. How are you?
What's going on, gentlemen? How you doing?
No, we're great, man. I've still got goosebumps from watching that game with Eric Thomas in studio tonight.
You got big E.T. there, right?
Absolutely. That was a classic, Peter.
It was a great game, guys. There's no doubt about it. I just got home. I worked a game over at RDS, and I could tell you, covering these games, these Final Four, since I think 1988 was my first one that I ever watched, this one has to be one of the best championship finals that we have seen. Big leads, momentum swings, adversity. And at the end, the team that was ranked number one heading into the tournament cuts down the net. So it's kind of fitting, and congratulations to Rick Pitino and the Louisville Cardinals.
And what a wonderful narrative. I mean, unfortunate the way it went down for Ware, but to win it for Ware is really something else, isn't it?
Well, you're absolutely right, Dave. Such a devastating injury, the poor kid. You know, when you're playing basketball or any sport for that matter, you know, we do sort of cuts and jumps. You never think that your leg's going to end up being that way. But his teammates, his coaches, his family, everybody rallied around him, and they won the championship for him. But this is a team that proves that they had overwhelming depth. They're extremely well coached. Rick Pitino becomes the first coach in NCAA history to win two national championships with two different teams. So quite an accomplishment for Coach Pitino. And the guys just really played inspired basketball. They controlled the backboards. I think that was the real key. And there was a guy by the name of Luke Hancock off the bench, a transfer from George Mason, didn't really play that much this year for Rick Pitino. Didn't start many games, but he called him a quasi-starter. He had 20 points in the semifinal win against Wichita State, and tonight 22 points, most outstanding player. Who would have thought that? But the kid came up big in the big times.
What did you think of Michigan? I mean, standout performances today. There was a point where Albrecht almost had as many points as Louisville.
Well, it was all Spike, Spike Heaven, Spike My Drink, Spike Anything You Want, guys. In the first half, it was unbelievable. He was on fire. He didn't miss a shot. Here's a kid who averaged 1.8 points a game throughout the whole season. He had 17 points tonight. It was just incredible. Small-town kid from Indiana, put in all the hard work and effort, all the individual workouts by himself to become the type of player in the big stage, and he had himself a great game. And Michigan had control up until late into the first half. They were up by 12 points, but then they let Hancock go free. He went off for three or four straight threes, and I think that was the difference. I think that momentum swing really carried over for Louisville into that second half. They were down by 12. Everything was going down for them, but Michigan thought they had this game in the bag, but Trey Burke picked up two fouls. The coach kept him on the bench the whole first half. He had a great game, 24 points. But when you're the player of the year, I got to question whether you got to sit him out that long. Despite Albrecht playing well, I just think that if Trey Burke was in there in the first half, played the whole half, maybe we'd have a different outcome right now. But unfortunate for them, but I'm sure the Cardinals will be celebrating all night long in Louisville, Kentucky.
Great point, Coach. We're in conversation with the coach, Pete Yiannopoulos. He's the NCAA basketball TV analyst at RDS and NCAA and NBA analyst right here at TSN 690. I'm Dave Kaufman. That's Jay Farrar, and the next question is coming from Eric Thomas.
We mentioned it before, Peter. You talked about it. 12-point deficit tonight for Louisville. They ended up coming back from that deficit. We saw that in the Big East Championship game against Syracuse. We saw it on Saturday against Wichita State, leads of about 12 or more. What does it say about the resiliency of this team to continue to be down in championship situations and just pull through and end up winning these games?
Well, Rick Pitino is not getting any younger, I can tell you that, coming back from all these huge deficits, and especially right here, two 12-point deficits at the Final Four and the semifinals and in the final. But this is just a testament to the overall depth that Louisville has. They wear you down. Tonight, Russ Smith, the leading scorer in all the tournament, just had 9 points. But we saw guys like Shane Bohannon, 15 points and 12 rebounds. He had 7 offensive rebounds. He was a monster on the boards. I think that he physically imposed his will in this game. But, you know, guys like Gordy Jang, guys like Stefan Van Treese, Montrezl Harrell, I think they had 4 or 5 big power forward centers. And Michigan, on the other hand, just really had Mitch McGarry. So they were able to really physically dominate this game on the backboards. And also, got to give credit, Peyton Siva, the senior point guard, struggled throughout the year this year, Eric, and didn't really perform as well as most people thought he would. He had a good game against Duke in the Elite Eight, struggled against Wichita State, but he came back tonight. He really attacked the rim. He really showed that he was a facilitator, a distributor, but he was really in attack mode, and he attacked Michigan, went straight to the basket. When he missed, Bohannon was there for the rebound. So it's incredible to be able to come back from so many games. But Rick Pitino really believed in his system. His players executed it. And right now, they're national champions.
Pete, how do we go from talking about the referees in the morning around the water cooler to talking about a classic basketball game? Whenever a ref factors into a game like this, it ends up being the dominant part of the conversation the next day.
Unfortunately, Dave, you're right. I try not to get on the refs as much as I used to. They have a tough job. Lord knows, when I played my coach, I was all on these guys. A couple of questionable calls really changed the game. Obviously, when Trey Burke blocked Peyton Siva, we all saw it. We saw the replay. He got all ball. There was no body contact. The fourth foul on Mitch McGarry, where Hancock leaned into him. McGarry has a right to come down after he jumps. So I think those were two critical calls in the game. Unfortunately, you know, with Twitter now, everybody has a voice, and Facebook, you could tell the guys that are really upset with the referees. They might have put a wager on this game. Unfortunately, this was a well-played game, one of the best we've seen in a long time. To have these type of swings, it was tremendous. But tomorrow morning, you're right, Dave, there's going to be people who are going to be criticizing the officials. I think overall, the officiating wasn't as good as during the regular season, but in these types of situations, you have to deal with it. Michigan has to overcome that adversity. I think that if you ask Coach Beilein, he won't say the referees or the officials played a pivotal role. I think that they themselves could say, hey, we could have played better and executed better down the stretch.
Peter, one thing I always find interesting is the discussions around the Final Four about draft stock and where guys will go in the NBA. Obviously, a few guys out on the floor tonight that will be playing in the association either next year or in the next couple of years. But who did you see draft stock rise in this tournament and who kind of fell off? Because Russ Smith, to me, I know he had a great tournament, but tonight 3 of 16 put his team in some pretty bad situations, only finished with 9 points. And same with Mitch McGarry on Michigan. I know the freshman will probably stick around for a couple of years, but 6 points in a championship game, 3 of 6 from the floor. I just didn't see it from him tonight either.
Yeah, difficult games for both those guys, Russ Smith and Mitch McGarry. It's funny, I spoke to seven scouts, NBA scouts this week, and I asked them the question, who would they draft if they had the number one pick? And the seven scouts gave me seven different names. the true story. And it's funny, I was picking their brain this week, and it's just this kind of draft this year. There's no clear-cut number one player. There's a lot of quality players, but no clear-cut Hall of Famer in the NBA for years. So right now, I think the scouts on all the teams, they've done their due diligence throughout the year. I don't think one game, this championship game, will really hinder or really help a player. A guy like McGarry, overall, his body of work has been tremendous. I think if he decides to declare and leave, he'll be a first-round pick. But I think he's best to come back next year and play another year and develop inside and mature more. I think a guy like Russ Smith, who's a junior, I think he's hit his ceiling, to be quite honest, guys. I think he's a guy who's in-betweener. He's not a true point guard. He's undersized, the two-guard position, but he could put the ball in the basket. And guys and general managers and scouts love guys like that. So interesting to see if he's going to try and come back for his senior year. I think Trey Burke proved that he has been not only the top point guard in the college basketball this year, but one of the best point guards we've seen in a long time. He's really helped his stock. He had 24 points tonight. He had to overcome foul trouble in the game, but he showed that he's a distributor as well, and he's a determining player who's going to have a great career at the next level. I think a guy like Gordy Jang, Eric, that's your question. I think he could have helped himself a little bit more, but during these games, you know, it's so difficult. The officials play a key role. There's foul trouble. Some guys get hot. A guy like, you know, Spike Albrecht, if he declared for the draft after the first round, maybe at the first half, he could have maybe got drafted, guys, the way he was going. But it's just a game that's built on emotion. And both these teams, I love the fact that they competed very hard, and they wanted it really bad, and it's unfortunate when one team has to come out a loser, but this was a well-played basketball game, gentlemen.
Jay, you have a question for your Hellenic brother?
I do not have a question. I just wanted to say about Spike Albrecht, it's only through Twitter where your 15 minutes of fame can literally be 15 minutes. It's just he disappeared in the second half. Everybody was going crazy. We had a whole deal going, and then just disappeared, and that was it. Poor guy. No T-shirts for him.
I wonder, Jay, how many followers on Twitter he got in the first half.
Oh, man.
Let's see if they stick to it. But you're right. You know, these are these type of situations. There's unsung heroes. The kid was aggressive. He made the shots. He took them. He believed in himself. Unfortunately, I think, not to get on the coach Beeline from Michigan, but I think he stuck to him a little bit too long in that second half. You know, when you're averaging about 10, 15 minutes a game, and now you're going to 30 minutes and taking a lot of shots. And let's not forget, Louisville had extreme full court pressure on him. You saw that his decision making really became a factor on the negative way. So there's some other guys maybe that could have gotten looks, but the coach went with the feel. Unfortunately, people never forget Spike. He was bigger than Spike Lee for about 20 minutes, guys.
And definitely bigger than Spike Owen.
Yeah, no kidding.
Love Spike Owen, man. Do we talk baseball, Dave?
Of course we can. We have a couple of minutes to talk baseball, and I'm going to throw it right at you, Pete. Who's your favorite second baseman in Montreal Expos history?
Listen, you know, we had a nice Twitter debate there. I love the Lionel Bishield. Bop, appreciate him answering us back. I love Jose Vidro as well. He was a great player for us. But the Lionel, Manny Trio was another guy that I liked in the 80s, man.
Manny Trio.
Yeah, so no, definitely, you know, can we get baseball back here?
Eventually.
I miss spring training. I miss going out to the games. I miss everything.
Same here, man. And I do have a message for you. I got a DM from Delino. He says that he's got some love for you.
Okay. So, right back at him, man.
Good to hear. I would throw Mike Lansing in that conversation, maybe, at least for 94.
94, Laser Lansing.
Oh, Laser Lansing, of course.
The greatest second baseman in Expos history is Jose Vidro.
For a very small period of time.
He is. He definitely is.
You know what? I was soured on Jose Vidro watching him not run out ground balls at the end.
He was fat.
Yeah, and he was done, and he didn't care.
Yeah,
and,
nobody did.
There's no
he had, he had a nice yellow Ferrari that he used to come with. I remember that.
Back-to-back All-Star appearances will do that to you.
Best outfielder, Vlad, Larry Walker, or Andre Dawson?
Vlad.
Wow, Jay, the biggest Andre Dawson fan I know.
Andre Dawson is my favorite Expo of all time. Vladimir Guerrero is the greatest Expo, not only outfielder, greatest Montreal Expo of all time.
I'm with you. I mean, I watch the guy play every day. So I feel like I miss Dawson. I miss the glory years of Tim Raines.
I saw him when I was just a kid growing up, so I modeled my batting stance after him. And, you know, he made an impression on me when I was very, very young. So Vladdy I saw in my teens and 20s, so it was
for
later
me,
on.
The reason that the Delino for me has always been the pinnacle is because of not just on the field but off the field. He wasn't here that long. For it to resonate, except for what he did off the field. The guy personified hard work and dedication to the game and appreciation for the history most of all, which, you know, is a great conversation to have right now with this Jackie Robinson movie coming out.
Most definitely, guys. A lot of tradition with the Expos. We don't know. We could talk all night about it. 1994, we had the Braves, 6.5 games. I will never forget.
Je me souviens, Pete. I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. Follow him on Twitter at Pete Yiannopoulos. Hellas! 2004
Baby.
Euro champs!
Forever!
Pete, thank you so much for your time, man. We'll catch up soon.
All right, cheers, guys. Have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye. There he goes.
Did you hear that thing about the Braves there, E.T.?
I did.
You heard that?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure you heard it. That's all.
Eric, you can handle that. Yeah. You've got every other year of the 90s. I think you'll be just fine.
Just one championship, though, so that hurts a little bit.
You know, I was at game one of that World Series in Atlanta at the... sitting basically right where Hank Aaron's home run would have landed a little further back. I think I was sitting behind Albert Bell of the Cleveland Indians in the outfield that game. It was Maddox versus Hershiser, and Maddox pitched, I think, a five-hitter. Braves took game one of that series and won that World Series.
I remember the last out very fondly. I'll never forget Marquise Grissom catching the final out in center field, out number 27 for the Braves' only championship.
You remember it fondly. We remember it in a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
Another great Montreal Expo
great stuff for other teams.
Somewhere else. Yeah.
That's what we do. This is the Kauffman Show. We're going to take a little break. John Kakalakis has a sports update for you. Eric Thomas, thanks so much for sticking around. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me on.
And that's about it. We'll be back in a few minutes.
For me, I ain't afraid to take the blame. It's a broken road, and it's too long.
Welcome back to the Kauffman Show. Our next guest's name is Noah Pransky. He works for the CBS affiliate in Tampa as an investigative reporter. It's WTSP for all of our listeners in the States. Noah, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
How are you tonight?
Doing well. I always love a good chat about stadium and team relocation.
Yeah, well, I think the trick in these situations, having dealt with it a decade ago when people were clamoring after our ball club, is to keep things polite, keep the conversation at an elevated level, which I'm sure we'll have no problem doing. And, I looked at your blog this morning, shadowofthestadium.blogspot.ca, and you have an article titled, How Silly is the Raise to Montreal Talk?
I think a lot of people here look at it as silly because, as you know, you can talk years and years and years about relocation and stadium and expansion and contraction. And ultimately, it usually takes years and years of rumors before anything really materializes. And in a lot of cases, years and years of rumors are more destructive than they are productive. Montreal might be the perfect example of how you talk about something for so long that it actually comes to fruition. And really, I don't know if Washington had a chance at getting a team if it wasn't for the years and years of contraction talk and relocation that ultimately may have played a part in dooming the franchise.
Well, I wonder if that's the case. I mean, obviously there were attendance issues and there were ownership issues and things were not right in this town. There's no debate as to why the team left. The question is whether things have changed that would allow it to come back. But I'm not a fan of the idea of poaching another team. And I'll be honest with you, since the Expos left, the team in Tampa is the one that reminds me the most of the one here. And not just because of the off-the-field problems, but, I mean, great drafting, a very exciting baseball team, a manager that is really easy to root for. And I think the viewpoint from the baseball fans up here is, why isn't it working in Tampa Bay?
You know, you hit the nail on the head when it comes to the ability to root for this team. Look at the amazing success they've had as the underdogs in the American League East.
Right.
As any Toronto fan could tell you, it isn't easy playing against the Red Sox and Yankees 19 times a year.
Hmm.
So the Rays have done amazing things, and the reason they're not drawing is not – there's not one reason. There's a lot of factors here. Part of the reason is the location of the stadium is not ideal. You have the Tampa Bay market is a very spread-out market where you've got a big chunk of people in St. Pete, even bigger chunk in Tampa. The stadium is in St. Petersburg, but it's a 30- to 40-minute drive for a lot of people to get there. And Florida fans aren't used to driving that far for baseball. You know, it's not like a city, Toronto, Boston, New York, where people will drive 60 or 90 minutes to get to the game. Down here, they're just not used to traveling that far for a game. So if it's more than 30 minutes, they see it as an inconvenience, and they just don't want to make the trip on the weeknights. Location is the biggest problem, but you also have this issue of Tropicana Field, where 10, 15 years ago, you didn't have a lot of people complaining about indoor baseball, especially in Florida, where it rains every day in the summer, and it's humid and muggy at night. But it's this self-fulfilling prophecy, where if you talk about something as being inadequate for so long, more and more people start believing in it. The Tampa Bay Lightning across town are selling out the arena every night, 19,000 fans, and they're doing it because the Tampa Bay Times Forum, or the old Ice Palace as it used to be known as,
right,
is seen as a cool place to hang out. It has the cool factor. Tropicana Field over the last 5 or 10 years has lost every ounce of cool, and you don't get those 20-something, 30-something, 40-something-year-old baseball fans going. Because down here, they're not really true baseball fans by and large. But they're looking for a cool place to spend their entertainment dollars. And Tropicana Field, they've talked about it being inadequate for so long, people are just opting not to go to games.
How much resentment is there, Noah, towards South Florida and the ability to get a stadium built and then really completely screw up the whole damn thing?
I think the diehard Rays fan in Tampa has a lot of resentment. But another thing is, you know, the Rays fan in Tampa, in St. Petersburg, probably doesn't care. The Tampa Bay Rays fan in St. Pete is happy that there's a stadium in St. Pete, and they don't want to see a new one built in a lot of cases. It's the fans in Tampa who wish there was a stadium closer, who wish they could pool the tax dollars or the public-private partnership dollars together to build a new stadium, and they look at it across the state, and they say, Miami really screwed this up for everybody. But I think it's still a minority here. There's a lot of people who wish the stadium saga would just resolve itself, but the fact is there's no immediate resolution on the horizon, and a lot of people are just, they just kind of accept it. They say, there's no new stadium here. The team will go on. And a lot of people are choosing to watch the games from home instead of going to a stadium.
Have you been able to gauge from the ownership how dedicated and committed they are to keeping baseball in the Tampa St. Pete area?
They seem very committed, not just from a fact, not just from the standpoint that they live here, they've worked here for a number of years, and they're seen around the community, but also from a business standpoint, it seems to make sense for them. Even without the new stadium, you look at the numbers that were leaked by Deadspin, or you look at the numbers that Forbes estimates every year. And the Rays have been one of the most profitable teams in baseball the last 5 or 6 seasons. That, of course, you know, includes a lot of playoff appearances and a lot of great runs, but they've had a tiny payroll, and they've been turning profits. They've had medium-sized payrolls, and they've turned profits. And they've had the league's worst attendance, and they've still turned profits. So I think they look at this media market here, which is the 14th largest in America, as one of great opportunity. They don't have a very good television contract. In a few years, they'll be able to renegotiate that, and that will pay big dividends when they're finally able to bring in more TV money. And as you look across the league, MLB is doing wonders with its multimedia and national television contracts. So there's a lot more money to be shared among Major League Baseball teams. So I think they look at the Tampa Bay region as a place of great opportunity. There's going to be more money coming in the future years, and if they are somehow able to get a new stadium here, I think there would be a lot more. So I don't think the prospects are great of the Rays leaving Tampa Bay anytime soon.
Which, again, is great news for the people of Tampa. And, I mean, we just saw they just opened up. They had a 6-game series to start the season at home. Averaged 23,000, which, I don't know, to you, is that a good number or is that a bad number?
It's probably not a great number. But it's not a surprising number either. Baseball in April is hard to sell anywhere for the same reason that you see Comiskey Field in Chicago empty because it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
The weather probably worked against the Rays in this opening series. It's been beautiful here in Florida. So people don't want to go to a game indoors. And the fact is it's an indoor stadium and it feels like you're indoors. But at the same time, it's great in the summer when it's 90 degrees and drizzling and humid out here. There's nothing better than 72 in air conditioning. So I think it's probably a disappointing start for the Rays, but there is some hope that maybe the summer months will provide a nice respite for fans who are looking to actually get inside and enjoy something.
Now, you sound like you're a big baseball fan, Noah, right?
Born and raised outside of Boston. Been following them my whole life. I've worked for the Red Sox a number of times over the course of my career, so I've been in basically every seat in the house, from the fan to the press to the staff, and lived with baseball, yeah.
Are there a ton of fans there that are worried about this? Is this top of mind? Because I remember those last few years in Montreal, and it was a difficult experience to go down to the ballpark and think that this may be the last season, this may be the last series. And it, you know, it's hard to feel devoted to a team when you know that there's always that possibility. Is there a sense of that?
I don't think so. Not to the levels that Expos fans lived with for years and years. Even Twins fans, you know, in the 90s.
Right.
When they kept talking about contraction. I just think it was more credible then. And in hindsight, it turned out to be not very credible at all. When they sound the contraction alarms, I don't think there's anyone here really listening. They're more likely to be scared by the relocation talk. And it makes great talk radio fodder down here. It makes great columns in the newspapers. But there's still not a lot of people really worried at this point. They're talking, but there's not a lot of worry.
In that talk, is there a get your butts to the stadium before it's too late? Or like you're saying, that's simply an optics issue. And the team makes money and the TV revenues and the radio revenues and the advertising revenues offset all of that. I remember George Steinbrenner once said that he could play to an empty Yankee Stadium every game because of the revenues from Yes.
And it's amazing that we don't hear that from elected officials and experts and people these days. The fact is the Rays could probably do the same thing. They don't have the kind of money coming in that the Yankees have, or even most other teams in Major League Baseball at this point. But someday down the road, they will, because they have great television ratings. So the Rays have plenty of money coming in right now, given their payroll. I think they would like an extra $10 million a year to play with, both from a bottom line and a payroll standpoint. Every team would like to. So would a new stadium help the bottom line? Absolutely. Is a new stadium necessary for this team to compete and continue to survive in Tampa Bay? I don't know the answer to that, but the only signs we see are it's not necessary. You know, when you see the financials from Deadspin or Forbes or wherever you see, Tampa Bay is surviving, and in many cases, they're thriving. So I don't know if there's much of a gauge right here, right now, as to how important those attendance numbers really are.
A couple of minutes left with Noah Pransky from Tampa's CBS affiliate WTSP. You can follow him on Twitter at Noah Pransky, P-R-A-N-S-K-Y. Noah, do you think they're a 90-win ball club again this year?
Boy, they sure look like it at times, and then other times, no. You have to assume Cy Young winner David Price is going to right the ship.
Yeah, well, I think every pitcher had a bad game on Sunday. I mean, Dickey gave up 8 runs. Matt Cain gave up 9 runs. All the aces had a rough day on Sunday. They must have been a big ace party on Saturday night.
Yeah, you know, if Price can right the ship, and the other guys will continue the way that I think that a lot of fans here expect them to, Jeremy Hellickson, Matt Moore, there's so much excitement around this pitching staff. If Price can right the ship and a full season of healthy Evan Longoria can improve their hitting a little bit from last year, they could win 90 again. But boy, does that AL East look tough.
Yeah, we had Anthopoulos on last week, and he said that even he's worried. He thinks it's a coin flip.
Yeah, I mean, the Orioles looked really good in the first week. And we know Toronto's going to be good, and there's Boston and New York.
Wow.
So it's anyone's game.
And that's the beauty of baseball, isn't it?
For everyone except teams in the American League East. I think all 5 of those teams would give up a lot of revenue if they could just move to a different division.
Noah, I hope that everything works out for you guys. I honestly mean that, and I really appreciate your time tonight.
Anytime, you got my number.
Thanks so much. Have a good one. Noah Pransky, there you go. If you listen to him, baseball's going to be in Tampa for a good long while.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. I would never want to get a team.
It's a messed up feeling, isn't it? I mean, look what's going on in Seattle right now, where there's this, they've pitted Sonics fans against Sacramento Kings fans. We're more worthy than you are. We'll take better care of the team than you will.
That's just stupid. I mean, it goes beyond the sport, and it really doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to get into sectarianism, does it? You know, I mean, that's what sport is at its heart. But at least, you know, you settle it on the field. When you start getting personal like that and hoping for the demise of another team, it strikes a bad chord, and it's bad karma, too.
A lot of people were hoping for the demise of the Expos at the end. People
of course there was. That's why it happened.
And Virginia area, people in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
I think, remember there was talk of them moving to Monterey, Mexico at one point?
Yeah. Jerks.
Well, yeah. Karma.
Karma.
We're fans of karma here at the Kaufman Show.
I'm not. I don't really believe in karma, but it's nice to say.
Well, for the sake of this argument.
Yes.
And then, the fact that you did just agree with me on it. So,
yes. Yes. For the sake of this argument.
Apparently, we're also big fans of flip-flopping here.
I will change my philosophical view just for the Expos. I would do it any time.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, Jay. It's, you know, I don't want to take anybody's team. I don't want somebody to feel the pain that we felt. But at the end of the day, if that's the only way to get a team back, then that's the only way to get a team back. Bud Selig on television.
Kind of cutthroat, isn't it?
Well, Bud Selig on TV last week with Hazel May on Sportsnet. She asked him about Expos Nation and whether he's aware of it. And he said he was. And he said that he was very clear that Major League Baseball is not pursuing any expansion right now. That gives one option to get baseball in this town if we're fast-tracking it. If we can believe all the hype and abandon the school of thought that we're going to be waiting 20 years or 25 years, which for a long time seemed to be the big thought that, you know, it's going to happen. It's just not going to be in my lifetime. It's going to be when our grandchildren are.
Well, we don't know how long Judge Landis, I'm sorry, Bud Selig will be around.
Well put.
So, you know what? We'll wait, maybe get a fresher, younger mind in there.
But why do we think
with a broader view on things?
Why are we convinced that Bud Selig is so against Montreal? I'm sure that Bud Selig likes money. And if Bud Selig can be told that more money will be made with a team in Montreal, then I think that changes his mind. I don't think Bud Selig hates Montreal. I think Bud Selig hated the situation.
No, Bud Selig likes money and has a lot of friends who like money.
Right.
And a lot of his friends who like money are owners of teams that draw well, that do well, that have a large population, Yankees, that don't really like the revenue sharing. And to bring in another team like Montreal is risky in their point of view.
Big difference between...
They'll have to go down from a Maserati to a Lamborghini. And who wants to do that, right?
God forbid. The big difference, Jay, between Tampa Bay and Montreal is ownership. They talk about having a stadium that's too far away. They do great drafting. They are an exciting ball club to watch.
Sounds familiar.
So reminiscent of the Expos,
yeah.
Except that they have their Bronfman.
Yeah.
And we didn't at the end.
They have a guy who cares and a guy who's willing to do whatever he can.
That's it. And they're making money.
And I respect that.
It shows that the game has changed, that you can draw 15 to 20,000 a game.
And still earn a buck.
And still be profitable.
Yeah.
George Steinbrenner used to say that he could make tons of money, be the richest team in baseball with an empty Yankee Stadium because mm-hmm. of the TV revenues through YES.
Yep.
Perhaps that day is soon for Montreal.
It's a different world.
Whether it's
different
on the
media.
Backs, I hope it's not on the backs of Tampa Bay. I like that team. I like the potential there. That being said, who else? Who else is it going to be? So we will continue to be patient.
Listen,
continue to wait for the feasibility
study. Like we said, Selig likes money. And if the Expos or whatever ownership group
right.
you know, comes in and says, well, look, we have the potential to make money. Minds change very quickly. Expansion, non-expansion becomes expansion. Say, wow, look at this. Look what's going on over here in this corner of North America.
But it's crazy to think, Jay, that the Expos could be profitable with the same attendance issues that Tampa has.
Mm-hmm. With a better stadium.
Potentially.
And more, a bigger population.
You have to build it first. That's right.
And a cooler logo.
And a much better dollar.
Well, again, but that's and that's for today. I don't think that anybody can guarantee that the dollar won't.
No, that could turn around very quickly.
It won't be a 65-cent dollar one day. That can happen just as quickly as it. I mean, it took the decline of the American Empire for Canada's dollar to be at par. Now, will the empire continue its rapid decline? We shall see. Let's ask a Yank. We've got Travis in North Carolina on the line. Hello, Travis.
I'm reporting live from the declining empire.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's amazing. The wonderful serendipity of life is that just as the Tampa stuff started happening, I got back in touch with a friend of mine who moved to Tampa, Florida recently.
Oh, the poor guy.
A couple of years. No, actually, he likes it pretty. Yeah, he doesn't complain too much about the nice weather. But seriously, look at that place on a map sometime.
Uh huh.
And look at where St. Petersburg is, and then. Nobody lives in Tampa or St. Petersburg. People live in the exurbs.
Right.
And
it's kind of like Las Vegas, isn't it? A little bit. There's nobody on the inside, but then you go out a little bit, and there are actually houses.
Well, that's the entirety of the southern United States is not organic. All of it is invented subdivisions and partitioned land. So it's all sprawl, and it's all in directions that are out. Like, it's never in. It's always out.
Right.
So that's the problem. It was a problem with Atlanta with the Thrashers because they had their arena in an awful place. It's a problem with Phoenix, the Coyotes. They have arena in a terrible place.
And the Panthers in Miami or in Sunrise.
Exactly. Although they are basically secure. That's the at least.
Well, and again, how? Why? I it makes no sense.
Well,
They sell out the Habs games. They sell out the Leafs games.
That's enough. Well, with the new division, they're going to play Montreal, Boston, Detroit. You know.
Yeah.
Toronto. Six times a year, but people don't realize and this is also why Tampa is probably not going to get an arena unless something amazing changes, because there is no more political will to spend money on those stadiums, because the Panthers organization gets paid many million dollars a year to manage that arena, because it is one of the most popular arenas in North America for concerts and events, and that combined with enough of the northern team games is enough to keep them above water.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah, they get a subsidy, a tax subsidy from the local government to pay for it. They got a taxpayer-supported loan to improve the facilities.
Yeah, but I think people are finally getting wise to that game, Travis.
Yeah,
you know, good luck in the city of Montreal if the feasibility study comes back and says that the taxpayer should pay for the stadium. I don't see it happening. I'm with the corruption issues and I mean, the fact that the hospital stuff, there's so many reasons in this town. I applaud Montreal for not kowtowing the way that every other city does to build a stadium. The Bell Center was built with private money. They got a hell of a tax break. They pay a very small amount of tax on a very valuable piece of land downtown. But that money, that building was built with Molson money.
And then look at Seattle.
What's it going to be there?
That's half. I think it's going to be half private, isn't it? It's pretty. It's not a giveaway. It's a severe private investment.
Which, again, I think that makes sense. I think that, and the people of Seattle weren't, they didn't want to be held hostage last time either. They were heartbroken, but they did not want to be held hostage.
They were smart. But one thing is that, and that one of the reasons why I don't think people should worry about the tax thing so much is exactly what the guy from Tampa, I forgot his name, was talking about the media rights.
Right.
It's not cut and dry how much those are going to be. The Dodgers get, $40 billion over the next 40 years because of the Dodgers.
Right.
You know, they get to get their money printing machine.
Yeah, but 3 years ago, the Dodgers were in so much trouble. It was just like a soap opera over there.
Exactly. It just goes to show you, if you find the right idiot who works for a media company, everything's fine.
I want to let that linger for a second. Can you actually repeat that?
All it takes is you find the right idiot in an expensive suit who works for a media company who thinks, hey, this can't possibly go wrong, and invest a ridiculous amount of money over a long period of time, hoping that people will always want to watch 50 games a year.
Travis, thanks so much for the call.
Cheers, man.
We'll speak to you soon.
Yeah.
Media idiots of the world, listen up. I want to go to a ball game in Montreal. Any media suits out there with a little too much money in their wallet? Got a couple of billion to spare?
Yeah.
Just a couple. I don't need a lot. Just a couple billion. I'm not picky. Just a couple billion.
Just a couple. Throw it out there. Small change.
I want to go to a ball game like I did on Sunday in Toronto.
Yes.
And in the seventh inning stretch, when I sing root, root, root for the Expos,
yes.
I don't want everybody
Did you say
to
that?
Always, every
Testify.
Single time. Every game I've been
Testify,
to.
Testify, Kaufman.
Damn straight. I want it to make sense when I yell, let's go Expos.
Yes.
I don't want to have to drive or take a train 6 hours to go to a ball game.
No.
And then have it be a 13-0 ball game.
With your ace on the mound.
With my ace on the mound. I go to the Eaton Center. I buy his autobiography. I go down to the stadium and watch 5 runs be given up before the first out of the game.
Open that dome up when you need warmer weather. Knuckleball's not working.
Too humid in there, man.
Yeah.
Way too humid in there. It was still fun. We're going to come back, talk a little. Actually, we're going to hear some jokes. Torben Rolfsson, Van Guy, will be next on The Kaufman Show.
Your eyeliner and burger. Let's disappear. I went out on the street today. The Canadian dream was as far away as it's ever been. As it's ever been. I went out on the street today. The Canadian far away as it's ever been, as it's ever been. S-O-C-I-A, L-I-S-M is here to stay. S-O-C-I-A, L-I-S-M is the only way. Hey, hey, hey.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. A little disclaimer. Socialism probably isn't the way to get the baseball stadium built.
No. Nope.
Just throwing it out there.
No.
Nope. We talk a big game, but frankly, we need a hardcore capitalist in a very shiny suit.
It only comes when it comes to
in a
baseball.
Sheer sucker suit.
Yeah, when it comes to baseball, I become completely right wing, a complete capitalist. I do every time. All my philosophies about baseball are just the complete opposite on my outlook in general life. And it's just, it's the weirdest thing. I make an exception for baseball. When it comes to baseball, I become very conservative.
But if you have, you know, a Bill Lee on the show, he'll talk to you about how baseball's a communist game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not involving the game
No, you
itself.
Mean outside of the lines, right?
Yeah, well for selfish reasons.
Well, of course.
To get a team back.
Right.
You've got to be a capitalist.
Right. You'll step on anyone's throat to get a team back.
That's right. I would.
How do we get the Yankees to move to Montreal? I'm still trying to figure out how to move that damn stadium from Ottawa. Sorry, David Gourlay.
I'll let him keep the damn thing.
Why?
Because build a better one.
With whose money?
You'll see.
All right. All right. We're waiting. We're waiting. We're excited. And in the meantime, it's time for the Kaufman Show's resident comic all the way from Vancouver. You can follow him on Twitter at VanGuy. His name is Torben Rolfsson, and he brings the laughs. This is week three, I believe. I would say he's passed the audition. And Jimmy, you're ready on the Jimmy with the hot hand. Boom!
There it is.
Yeah. A little premature, but I appreciate it. Torben Rolfsson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave, Jay, how's it going?
Great. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. I just left a viewing party that had the NCAA title game on one screen and Canucks Coyotes on the other. I told them I had deadlines to meet.
Ah, good man.
No, that
Jimmy,
was
that's not a joke.
No, that was a compliment. Jimmy, that was a compliment there, Jimmy. Okay. Good start.
It's okay. We're paying attention.
Jimmy's paying attention.
We're all here. This is almost as funny as Torben. Torben. So NHL hitting the home stretch right now, eh?
Yeah, and the Vancouver Canucks, they may be the only company whose solution to an employee partying too much is to send him on an all-expenses-paid trip to Chicago. What is this, celebrity rehab with Patrick Kane?
There you go.
You know that sort of cliched crowd shot where a couple are each wearing one of the jerseys of the two teams playing?
Sure.
Yeah, my friend, he took a date to the Canucks Flames game Saturday night, and the two of them had opposing jerseys. I like it when people wear those powder blue Hockey Night in Canada ones. They're saying, I like hockey in general. I just can't commit to one team. If you start dating someone who has that jersey, watch out.
It's like guys who wear an NHL jersey. You just don't know why.
It's tough to handicap the NHL playoffs. My money's on the buzzsaw. Oh, they are running into a buzzsaw. You hear that phrase a lot. They're running into a buzzsaw in the East playoffs, a buzzsaw in the Penguins. That'd be a good name for a new franchise, Seattle Buzzsaws.
That would work.
Fargo Woodchippers.
Francis McDormand likes that one.
There you go. Also, what's bigger these last 3 weeks of the season, a game with playoff ramifications or implications?
It depends on how verbose you are, I guess.
We need a new word, rimplification.
Rimplification! Yes, sir.
I like it.
Or rim shot amplification.
Jimmy likes that one.
I guess you guys know the deal for an outdoor NHL game in Dodger Stadium is nearly done. Apparently, they'll play at night, and the refrigeration system will keep the ice cool enough if there's no direct sunlight. And no direct sunlight? I guess the untapped L.A. demo the Kings are targeting is goths and vampire cults. The Lost Boys. Speaking of Dodger Stadium, reports say North Korea has two missiles loaded and aimed at the U.S. The Dodgers changed their giveaway promotion this weekend to batting helmet night.
Hope this room is duck and cover.
Their hazmat jersey is selling faster than Lakers are booking April Vegas hotel rooms.
Hi-oh.
The Clippers swept their season series with the Lakers 4-0 and clinched the Pacific Division title.
Amazing.
It was the first thing a Clipper had won since Michael Olowokandi pumped $300 into one of those stuffed animal claw crane games.
Oh my God.
Floyd Mayweather had $16.7 million on Michigan plus four tonight.
No.
That's about equal to what Manny Pacquiao lost on cockfighting.
Torben Rolfsson, ladies and gentlemen, follow him on Twitter at VanGuy. We'll catch you next week.
All right, have a great one, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
I love the idea. He comes on, bunch of one-liners.
Yeah.
Ta-da-ta-da-ta-da-ta-da-ta.
Yeah.
Pulled off with the hook.
By the way, Spike Albrecht just tweeted that he wished it was 9:30 p.m. again.
Come on, Jimmy.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Getting it from all sides here on the Kaufman Show. We're going to take a little break. John Kakalakis, going to bring you a sports update. Because, you know, we bring them a quarter past the hour sometimes.
What? Oh, really? Oh, is it early?
Why not? And then we'll come back. We'll take a couple of your calls, and we will put this baby to bed. Don't forget, if you missed any of The Kaufman Show tonight, you can catch it on iTunes or at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. Jay Farrar is on Twitter at JPubRadio. I am at The Kaufman Show. And if you join our Facebook page, Jay Farrar will come and paint your house this summer.
Wait, what? Again? With this?
I got to keep you busy, man.
I don't like going to people's houses.
I got
to
keep you busy. You don't have to go inside. It's just an exterior job, okay?
Oh, I thought it's even worse. That's like, it involves ladders and stuff. That's not very enticing.
You're tall.
What was the random rim shot? Random rim shot
we've
from
hit
Jimmy.
The random
Jimmy, you're
rim
awesome,
shot
man.
Hour on the Kaufman Show.
Jimmy's the best.
Welcome back. It's The Kaufman Show. And sometimes I like to play a little game, surprise my co-host Jay Farrar with something, and just see how he reacts. We call it poking the bear.
Oh.
Hey, Jay, remember a few weeks ago we had Rulon Gardner on?
Who?
Talking about the demise of Olympic wrestling.
Yes,
one of the
course.
Greatest wrestlers in Olympic history.
Yes.
Rulon Gardner. He won the gold medal of defeating Alexander Karlin in the 2000 Olympics.
Yes.
Shocking the world.
Yes.
Well, we're going to get rid of the most ancient and honorable of Olympic sports. Might as well replace it with 3-on-3 basketball, right?
Really?
This is from the Associated Press tonight. With 3 years until the Rio Games, 3-on-3 basketball, and wait for it, and BMX freestyle are trying to join the Olympics. This is what it's come to, people. Mitt Romney and his horse for dressage and a little 3-on-3 hoops. You know that thing that they have, the NBA Jam-style tournament at the Olympic Stadium every summer outside?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Samuel Dalembert will come by and, you know,
yeah,
root on the fans.
Then dodgeball, put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a game we used to play in the schoolyard called Suicide.
Oh, who didn't love Suicide?
Throw a tennis ball against the wall.
Boy, then, take it out of context, that's going to be one weird-ass quote, huh?
Whip it at your friend's head before you can make it at the wall.
No, wait, Suicide and Murder Ball.
Murder Ball.
Are they two of the same?
I don't know. We used to call it Suicide in Chamonix.
I thought Suicides were the thing you ran in the gym, where you had to go like 20 feet and then run back and then go 30 feet and then run back.
We didn't do anything like that in the gym.
Okay.
We played Suicide in the gym. Not much of a gym program.
Murder ball was played against a wall.
Yeah. Yeah, but Suicide's the same thing. If you bobbled the ball, you had to run and touch the wall before your friend whipped the ball at your head.
We cover all the sports here on the Kaufman
Show. Yes, that's next in the Olympics. You know what? I'm for everything being in the Olympics. Go ahead, throw it all in. Just don't eliminate.
Well, yeah, but stop throwing stuff out.
That's right. Put chess in. I don't care. It's a competition. Do it.
We're going to have golf and rugby sevens in the next one in Rio.
Rugby sevens?
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, when you don't want to play with 12. Is that rugby league? I remember somebody once explained to me the difference between rugby and rugby league, which are two different sports. Supposedly, rugby is for the upper crust of society, the Eton boys, and rugby league is for the factory workers, the ones that Margaret Thatcher hates.
I see. And they're going to have 45-on-45 cricket, but bring it down to 45 players on each team.
Is that how many there are?
I don't know.
I'm not sure how
I just know there's a hell of a lot of guys out there.
Well, we are
in nice sweaters.
We are tying it all together right now. We're talking capitalism, baseball stadiums, murder ball, suicide. Phone lines are open, 514-790-1690. What was that, Mr. Farrar?
Taking wrestling out of the Olympics. Ridiculous.
Greco-Roman wrestling.
Ridiculous.
1-866-896-2546. If you're out of town, it may as well be on our dime. We are owned by Bell, after all.
Yes.
I hear we're
Advantage us.
I hear we're competing with Keith Richards right now on late night television. What does he have to say that's interesting? Everything that he said's in the book, okay? You just sound, that sounded like Bob Dylan threw up on Keith Richards.
Same thing, isn't it? It's a conversation between him and Bob Dylan.
Stone's tickets went on sale today. I was asleep, so I saved some money this morning.
Okay.
I think sometimes that's the right call. There, you know what, man? I'll tell you, there were posters all over Toronto for the Stones, which was really cool because they announced two shows in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in Montreal?
Nothing in Montreal as of yet.
Okay.
I don't know why. It's the... I don't know. We got to get our buddy.
We get Iron Maiden 12 times a year, but we can't get the Stones.
We had our buddy Dan Glick from Oshiaga from Evenko on a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
Man, could you imagine if they had the Stones play Oshiaga? Could you imagine?
Yeah, that'd be great. Why
wouldn't
not?
That just be wonderful?
Sure.
I can't imagine.
I don't know. I don't know how well Keith Richards would do in the sunlight.
Well, play
being a vampire at all.
They could play at night, yeah. But I don't think that Oshiaga can afford to bring the Stones and have 120 other bands on
yeah,
the bill.
Yeah.
Oshiaga would turn into a one-day, three-hour concert with the Rolling, featuring the Rolling Stones,
yeah.
Which might alienate the demographic, come to think of it. I don't think the hipsters are so into the street-fighting man and the honky-tonk woman.
I think Oshiaga is moving beyond hipsters now. It's going to... Every year it gets more and more mainstream. So, like everything else starts out as... You know, has a cult following, and then it goes mainstream, and then
you mean like the hipsters, basketball?
The hipsters get upset because it's not ironic enough, you know, and so they try to go at something else. So, Stevie Winwood is cool. Let's like him because it's ironic.
Hey, man, Stevie Winwood is cool. Traffic was awesome.
Yeah.
That got me into stoner rock when I was a real young kid.
Yes.
Light Up or Leave Me Alone, The Low Spark of High Heel Boys, Rock and Roll Stew.
Yes.
Who doesn't love traffic? A little traffic now and then. Some blind faith to get you through the night.
Back in the highlight.
Yeah, see, that's the cheese. I mean,
that reminds me of 93 Stanley Cup.
Really?
Because that's the song that CBC played at the end of Hockey Night in Canada. That was the montage.
At the end of
the
end. They won the cup. Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
I was 12 years old being ferried out of the forum by my father.
Yes.
We were on the escalator when the drunks... pulled down the 75th anniversary banner, the
awesome.
NHL 75th anniversary banner that was hanging, that wonderful staircase on St. Catherine Street with looked like two hockey sticks crossing each other. Do you like my idea of putting the baseball stadium there?
Well, I mean, if it's plausible, I like an idea of putting a baseball stadium anywhere as long as it's near downtown.
We've talked about that park across the street from the Forum before, Cabot Square. It is a...
With all the statues full of pigeon shit on them.
Yes, and what was the line in your brother's song?
Which one? Shaughnessy Village?
Yeah, because I think it aptly describes that part of town.
Yeah.
I can't remember it exactly off the top of my head, but check out Anakin Slade's new song, Shaughnessy Village. It's fantastic. I think that if you annex Cabot Square and, I guess, what's the street that's directly behind it? It's parallel to St. Catherine. That's Tupper Avenue.
Yes, Tupper.
And you go all the way and you knock down the Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Which sounds very insensitive.
Let's
except for the
knock
fact
down
that
Children's Hospital. See, I told you, we become capitalists when it involves a baseball team.
Won't somebody think of the children?
Yeah. Screw the children.
Jay.
There it is.
Turn that up.
Shaughnessy Village.
I'm going to take a walk around my neighborhood. Shaughnessy Village. Come on.
Because, you know, nothing regentrifies a downtrodden area quite like a baseball stadium, right?
Yes.
That's the fine folks at Chavez Ravine.
Oh, God. I don't know how much relocation would be involved in this, but, I mean, I don't think any.
You could, I don't know, a little up the street, a little down the street.
Some cardboard boxes. Yeah, some cardboard boxes that are going to have to move.
The point is
some refrigerator boxes used as homes right now.
That hospital is closing, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we're not saying to knock down a functioning children's hospital for the sake of putting a baseball stadium.
We're not completely.
I would.
We're not completely heartless.
Yeah, I would say that.
Or we are, but not while we're on air.
Yeah.
I think it's a perfect spot. I hope somebody asks me my thoughts on it, because I think that would be a spot that would, I mean, for crying out loud, Jay, there's a metro station already built underground.
Directly right there.
Right there.
Right underneath.
Nobody ever complained that the Montreal Forum was a difficult place to get to. Nobody ever complained from the West Island or the East End that Atwater and St. Catherine was a bad location.
All those abandoned stores and potential bars and restaurants that are not doing well, that'll help out, having a stadium near there. You are still close to the downtown core, so you'll have access to Crescent, only a few blocks down, and Peel.
That's right.
I know a good place there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Which place is that?
Oh, that's McLean's Pub.
Right. So what goes on there, Jay?
Probably the best place to watch a Habs game in town.
Outside of the Bell Center.
Outside of the Bell Center, if you can't afford to. The payment is fun, Dave. Fun.
Just like the Kaufman Show. Look at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Wherever you go, Jay, your payment is fun.
Yeah, often during the dead days of summer when I'm working at the pub, I think, man, would it be great to have a Montreal baseball team on the screens right now? Sit back, have a cold one, watch the games. Ugh.
Well, in the meantime, Jay, Expos Nation is planning a trip to Toronto. And as you know, we were there together last year, and I've had very few experiences at a baseball game as enjoyable as the one that we had last summer, watching the Expos play the Tampa Bay Rays. The Blue Jays play the Tampa Bay Rays. I believe I just said Expos.
Wow. Wow, Freudian slip there, buddy.
Well, and on the day where...
That would have been a Freudian slip if you had said the Blue Jays facing the Expos. That would have been a...
I think it would have been a Freudian slip if I said something about sex in there. Otherwise, it was just a slip, right?
Okay, so now we know what's really on your mind.
Right, it was a Kennesaw Mountain Landisian slip.
Yes.
A Seeligian slip.
Yes.
Expos Nation has gone the extra mile this year. First of all, over 150 tickets have already been sold. You go to BlueJays.com/ExposNation, I believe. Tickets are only $32 to sit out there in the outfield. It's a great seat. We had a wonderful time last year. But get them soon because they are going fast. Also, this time around, there's transportation. You can either get on the bus, which is $72 round trip plus tax, leaves at 5 a.m. the day of the game, and then leaves Toronto again at 6 p.m.
Serge is not driving.
Serge is, I promise,
Serge is not driving.
If you would prefer a more relaxed option, you can take the train. Via Rail is going to do a $100 round trip return, and you don't have to leave the same day. You can come back the next day, the day after that, if you want to have a good time in Toronto. It is possible. I had a good time there this weekend, I promise.
It's changed. City's different.
It's fun, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do in that town.
Yeah.
There is plenty, including Major League Baseball.
Yes.
The Grand Hotel on Jarvis Street in Toronto is offering a very special Expos Nation discount for our Toronto trip. You can get a deluxe room with a king or a queen and a pull-out sofa for $169, which, you know, it sounds expensive, but this is the big city here. Good luck getting a hotel for that price. That includes a breakfast buffet, free internet, pool, rooftop patio with whirlpool tubs and a fitness center.
Breakfast buffet.
Breakfast
not
buffet.
Continental breakfast.
Oh, no. Breakfast buffet.
So there's meat.
There is meat.
Okay.
There is plenty of meat.
Not a dried out carrot muffin.
I was there this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, it was this weekend. And sitting, look over next to me during breakfast, and there's Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, boy, really?
Yeah. Not wearing the Coke bottle glasses.
Yes. He's going the same way as Spike Albrecht, by the way. It's all over but the crying.
I really recommend that you get on the bus or get on the train. The only thing with the train is we need 55 people to commit in order for this to be valid. So you have to send an email to info@exposnation.com. Matthew Ross will get that email, compile, and then once we get to 55 names, we can book it with Via. But that seems like a heck
of
a deal.
Is Ross coming to this thing?
Everybody's coming, all Jay. Right. You're coming to this thing. John Kakalakis is coming to this thing. Jimmy G is coming to this thing. It's going to be a party, man. And I'll tell you what, I'm on the train yesterday after the ball game coming home, and there are baseball fans on the train. People are talking baseball on the train. They're mainly wearing Red Sox stuff, but there are baseball fans on the train. So I went up and down my cart saying, hey, Expos Nation, see you on July 20th. You'd better be there. And somebody sent a tweet today saying that they are booking 15 tickets tomorrow, that they are excited and ready to go. And that means that the 150
that's
tickets
already
sold
now
is going to be 165. That's right. Get on
that's
it,
already.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You still got months to go.
No need to lollygag. Let's make this happen. Let's show Toronto and the rest of Major League Baseball what we can do. I wish that we were playing the Expos.
Yes.
But I also wish that it was another team and not Tampa, because I don't think that it's a slight to Tampa. I don't think that this is, people may view it last year it was against Tampa as well.
Yeah.
And I don't love the idea of kicking them when they're down.
Yeah.
I don't love that idea.
The Nordiques fans going to Islanders games, you know.
But I also think it's a tough sell to get all the Expos fans chanting something like, we want your team.
Yeah.
It's not that cut and dried yet.
No.
So we'll see what happens. And in the meantime... What?
I don't know. You're so sad all of a sudden.
Eeyore there for a second, didn't I?
And in the meantime...
We got to root for other baseball teams and try and enjoy Major League
Baseball. Just root for baseball. Watch baseball. Enjoy
it.
It doesn't have to be a particular team. That's what I do.
I hope Dickey turns it around, though. I do. And I'm not a Blue Jays fan, but I am an Alex Anthopoulos fan. He's a good friend to this show. And I want to see them do well for many reasons, but mainly for Alex Anthopoulos. I'm hoping that he can cement a real legacy right now, which would be, I mean, you have to take it forward a few steps, but...
There's a chain reaction that could happen, though.
It's so good for Montreal.
Wins the World Series. It piques interest in the rest of Canada. And then Americans see that, and then they start asking questions.
Which is happening now. We saw the Boston Globe talking about it. It's become a part of the conversation, which is fantastic. And our hats are off to Warren Cromartie and the Montreal Baseball Project and Matthew Ross and everything he's done with Expos Nation. And we'll continue to keep the faith, I think, is the plan.
Yeah.
Mr. Farrar.
We will.
All right.
That's what we do.
Good. So I know Alex Anthopoulos is excited to see us down there on July 20th. And I'll be there with bells on.
And you'll never know who you'll see in the seats as well. Last year, Jim Fanning I had no idea.
How cool was that?
Yep. And there's Jim Fanning sitting there, former Expos manager.
With Rich Griffin. From the Toronto Star, the former Expos PR guru.
And I looked over to my left and Jonah Carey was there.
I hope Jonah comes again this summer.
He will.
He said he needs the magical airline ferry to get his ticket.
Get it done. Get her done.
I think we should all contribute. We should do a Kickstarter campaign to get Jonah Carey to come to the game.
Right.
And somebody actually just suggested on Twitter that we should, of course, Canadian music legend Brad Ferguson. I say we start an Expos Kickstarter project. $2 billion gets the broadcast rights. $1 billion gets the stadium naming. I like it.
Perfect.
I like it.
Got the prices up. It's all ready to go.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Any takers?
The Polemus is ringing in as well. Bring on the 3-on-3, he says. I want to see the IOC commissioner dropping "He's on fire" and "Boom Shakalaka" at the podium in Rio. This is the Kauffman Show. Give us a shout. 514-790-1690. 1-866-896-2546. Let's go out on the odds.
Rolling, Bob. To be alone with you, just you and me. Now won't you tell me true, ain't that the way it ought to be? To hold each other tight the whole night through. Right. When I'm alone with you, to show. And while life's pleasures be few, the only one I know is when I'm alone with you. They say the night time is the right time.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. I'm going to try and do something here, Jay.
What are you going to do?
You know that wonderful website, Deadspin?
Yes.
That wonderful website, Deadspin. They've been going through something very epic recently. It's your bleeping swear word bracket.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen this? It's the full-on NCAA-style bracket, but with swear words.
That's nice.
So,
can't read any of it, unfortunately.
For example, the one seed and the sex regional is beep, and they played the 16 seed.
Yeah.
Can we say that word? No, I guess we can't. Can we say any of these words? Well, I mean, we can say, no, can't say that one. I don't know, context is everything, right?
Yeah.
Like the three seed in the body regional is boobs, and I feel like we can totally say boobs.
Boobs you can say.
Sure, and taint seems to be, I mean, how is that even a swear word? That's just, you know, to mar something or to sully it. Taint.
Taint?
Taint.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
The old grade mare, she taint what she used to be. All right, I'm out. I quit.
Wow.
I quit. Hell is in the bracket, in the potpourri regional. Wow. There's some real swear words here. But then there's things like bugger or arse. And I feel like bugger and arse and bollocks are just, you know, Noel Butlerisms.
Yes, they are.
Those get said all the time. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
The compound curse word regional, I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole.
No, no. The more syllables, the worse it is.
Yeah, I am willing to bet that the number one seed out of the compound curse word regional wins the whole thing, wins the whole bleeping thing. Let's go to the phones. We've got Adam in Montreal. Good evening, Adam.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Hey, it's Adam Kovac. How are you, sir?
Old friend of the show, I believe.
That's right. Old friend, second-time caller, long-time listener.
How's it going, Dave?
I'm great. What's going on, man?
Staying up past my bedtime.
Oh, that's all right. You're a rock and roller now, as far as I can understand. I heard I missed a heck of a show. Adam's Always Late is the name of Adam Kovac's band, and they had a big show last week at Reggie's.
See, I didn't think we'd get a plug for this, but kind of you'd bring it up.
Well, it's a plug after the fact, right? It's a little different than a plug before the fact.
Well, I feel I need to chime in on a correction on something that you just said before.
Oh, boy. Nice. This is turning into PTI.
Well,
from This Canadian Life to PTI. Nice.
You brought up a word I'm quite fond of, which is taint.
Yes.
And, I think that they meant it in the context of the anatomical region of the body.
Oh, is that what they meant?
Yes. Should I define it for your listeners, or can I not do that on air?
Adam, you should know.
Delicate.
You have, exactly. You have
delicate.
As much leeway as the dump button allows.
Well, I'm just saying it is an anatomical area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to swear. It's between the testicles and the anus.
How thorough. This is, did you learn this from your brother, the urologist?
I actually, I'm going to have to confirm it with him. I think I knew this from before, but I don't think he'd appreciate being called at this hour to confirm this kind of thing.
Okay, but we can still call him a urologist, right? That is what he is?
Yes, he is a doctor who deals with the male anatomy. That is correct.
Oh, there is so much that I want to say right now.
I know.
And if it was my other show, I would. But I'm just going to shut up, Dave, and sit here and listen.
I don't know if Adam has another point or not, but if that was...
We stand corrected,
if
sir.
If that's the reason that Adam called in, then I appreciate it.
I just had nothing better to do with this hour, so I figured I'd give you guys a call. And
there's never anything better to do with this hour than listen to the Kaufman Show. Come on, this is why 1:40 in the morning was created. It's not for Carson Daly. It's not for some Frasier rerun. It's for us, dag nabbit.
I can't disagree with you on that.
So you want those R. Kelly tickets, right?
Yeah, if I could get a ticket to R. Kelly, that would just be phenomenal.
Absolutely. After the lobby, it's the something.
Well, I just heard that you guys are buddies, and I figured it would be worth a shot.
Yeah, me and R, we're tight. I love that R. Kelly and the R. Kells get confused on the Kaufman Show. Again, I think things that only happen in the middle of the night.
I confuse them at all hours of day.
Adam, the first time we met was at the Gary Carter night at Hurley's Irish Pub when you were covering the event.
Right.
And I think you were writing for Open File.
I was working for Open File at the time.
Can we assume you got paid for that?
I did get paid for that.
Good.
I don't know how much about Open File I should be talking about because there's still complications.
Well, they say the checks are rolling in. So
I can confirm I have received a check.
Good. Good. Unfortunately, it was for 38 cents, but he got a check.
How do we get into his money business now?
Well, it was money and baseball seem to go hand in hand in conversations tonight.
Okay.
But this started, I said, the night I met Adam, he interviewed me at the Gary Carter evening at Hurley's Irish Pub.
Yes.
Now, I know that Adam is a baseball fan, a diehard Montreal baseball fan, just like so many of you out there. What do you think of the developments of late? What do you think of the feasibility study that's being conducted right now?
Well, you know, I mean, it's how can somebody not approve of that is kind of the point of view I'm taking on it. And, like, the timing just seems so right. You got the Jackie Robinson movie coming out.
Huh.
This is, from what I heard, like, part of it takes place in Montreal. I hope part of it takes place in Montreal.
I saw the movie last week. Part of the movie does not take place in Montreal. None of the movie takes place in Montreal. It's Jackie in the Montreal uniform playing in spring training in Florida.
That's kind of disheartening.
Why? Think about who this movie's for. It's for Americans. The Montreal part of the Jackie Robinson story, in the eyes of America, is the anecdotal kind of aside. Yeah, he played a year in the minor leagues in Montreal, and it opened the door for him to play in Brooklyn. But the big story is him playing in Brooklyn. I personally did not love the movie. I hope some critics say the same thing, but I thought the movie was lacking. Now I know the story inside out, and that obviously changes it. And a lot of this movie was made for people who don't know the story, who don't know all the details. But I thought a lot was missing.
I know you have Dave Zirin on a lot, who we both adore.
Yes.
Did you read his piece on the movie?
I did. Dave Zirin wrote a piece at The Nation called His Five Fears About 42. And I hate to say it, but every one of those five fears was validated.
Mm.
The movie glorifies Branch Rickey. History doesn't glorify Branch Rickey. He bankrupted the Negro Leagues by not offering any compensation to any of the teams when they pilfered their players. And therein ruined one of the only self-sufficient businesses for African Americans at the time.
Well, on the plus side, you did just save me $11.
Well, no, I would still say see it, Adam. Perhaps you could see it on Cheapy Tuesday.
You know me so well.
No, I still think it's worth seeing just to have the debate about it. And there are some wonderful things in that movie. Wait, let me think of some. No, the CGI in the movie was fantastic. That they recreated Crosley Field in Cincinnati and Brooklyn, Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. And the one that blew me away was the Polo Grounds.
Mm.
The deep center field. I don't know how they did it, Jay, but it looked so real. That was phenomenal.
Did they have Coogan's Bluff, too, above it, the big hill?
Yes. Well, that's nicely done, Jay.
Thank you.
You know that
I'm educated.
You're an edumacated individual.
Yes, I am.
Isn't that the Polo Grounds is on Riverside Drive now? When you drive into New York City after you get off the GW Bridge, that's where it would have been. Where they're scouting for 3-on-3 basketball at the Olympics.
Yes.
Rucker Park.
Yes.
That's where the Polo Grounds
was. That's where they'll find the guys, yeah.
What a deep center field. If you anybody's interested, go on to my Twitter page at The Kaufman Show. A beautiful photograph is my profile picture in the background. My background picture is the Willie Mays catch.
Mm.
And it's colorized, which is you've never seen this photo in color before. But to see Willie Mays running for miles to that deep center field wall to make the catch, it's something to see. Adam, please do see the movie. I would love to debate it with you at the next Manaphone Bars.
That would be an absolute pleasure. I'm hoping to actually make it to one of those in the next couple of weeks because I've just been kind of a hermit the last couple of weeks. But I miss you, Dave.
Oh, I miss you too, buddy.
And I miss Jay as well.
No, you don't.
Oh, don't even start.
You stop it.
Adam Kovac, thanks so much for the call, man. We'll catch you soon.
Yeah, good talking to you, Dave.
Always.
Bye. I've always had a problem with
Kovac. Why?
No, not at all. I like Kovac. He's a nice guy. You mentioned earlier how you get disappointed when you see biographies, especially about people that you've done a lot of research on and you have a good knowledge about. And that's what happened with me and Ali.
Okay.
People loved Ali. My brother and I, this is one of the only movies we've ever disagreed on. I didn't like it. I never liked that movie because I found it never captured the essence
of
Muhammad Ali.
It's hard to tell the story of somebody as iconic as Muhammad Ali or Jackie Robinson in 2 hours.
Yes, exactly.
It's nigh on impossible.
Especially in Ali where they focused more on the Rumble in the Jungle than anything else.
Right.
Which is fine because it is a pivotal moment in his career. I just found that, I guess maybe I found the acting was weak. I guess Will Smith, I just didn't find that he really captured. It sounded like he was doing a bad impression the whole movie, and that's the worst thing that you can do about it.
You see, the guy who played, and I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. I'd never seen him before, but the guy who played Jackie Robinson, what bothered me the most was he didn't sound like him at all.
No, he didn't.
He didn't. Don't give Jackie Robinson this deep booming voice, this baritone. Don't
that's
make
right.
him sound
he was
like
very
Jay Farrar.
Yeah. He was actually Jackie Robinson was very soft spoken. In fact, he had a small voice for a big man.
Yeah.
He was a large man. You know, and you know, he spoke actually very clearly and very well. You know, he had this very, you know, soft, articulate voice. And it's, you know, and they say the same thing about Abraham Lincoln.
Well, and that's why one of the beauties of Lincoln was that Daniel Day-Lewis had the voice down. Not that I've actually ever heard Abraham Lincoln's voice, but everything that I've read about Lincoln is that he had this high voice that would carry for miles.
Yeah, because there's a thin line. There's a thin line between doing a great acting job or it just sounding like a bad impression. And then it becomes farcical. You know, you don't want to do that. So it's very, very hard. And, you know, Will Smith wasn't bad. It just didn't.
No, and he wasn't bad either, the actor who played Robinson. And Harrison Ford wasn't bad. And I think his name's T.R. Knight, who played the assistant to Branch Rickey.
That's the first time I've ever seen Harrison Ford do a character.
Yeah, I know, eh?
Yeah. He's never done a character before.
Well, Jack Ryan.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know what I mean. A characterization role.
It was
yeah.
very weird, though, when Branch Rickey looked over and went, "Get off my plane.
Get off my plane."
There were a lot of things to enjoy about the movie.
I'm going to hate it.
You are.
You know right away that I'm going to hate it.
Well, look, Jay, I love all movies. I love the experience of going to the movies, and I very rarely do I walk out of a movie not satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to sit there and think critically watching this movie. I was sitting in a theater with 500 Expos fans. It was amazing. Claude Raymond was there. I took my mom. I got to introduce her to Roger Brulotte.
Nice.
He says to her, "Mrs. Kaufman, your son and I have the same affliction. Baseball."
"Your son and I have the same affliction. Baseball."
Hopefully Roger will join us on the Kaufman Show one of these days. We'll wait till we don't have a midnight start to get Monsieur Brulotte into studio.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Let's go to the phones for our last call of the night. And we're going to do it right. It's Mike in St. Leonard. Hello, sir.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good, good, good. I just wanted to say hi, see how you guys are doing, and talk a little bit about that movie that's coming out. Dave, I just wanted to ask, since you've seen it already,
yeah.
Did it, I guess it's basically like a Hollywood version of anything. So, it's got its ups and downs, and it basically follows the same path as any movie would, where it's a happy ending and everything's good at the end. But
right.
Does it cover how he was chosen versus some of the other guys in the Negro League?
Not really. There's a peripheral scene where he's sitting in the office and kind of going through different players. Like, what about Satchel Paige? No, he's too old. What about this guy? Well, he hasn't done enough. Okay. And then they come across the paper that has Robinson's name on it, and it says, well, he was in the Army, and he was, he put up a big fight, and he was court-martialed because he refused to move to the back of the bus. These are things that I wish we'd seen.
Yeah.
That's and unfortunately, the movie can only concentrate on a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And basically, the movie was sign Robinson, plays for Montreal in spring training. Next season, makes it up to the big club, and then there's your story.
Then the story.
And, I mean, that's a story, and there's nothing wrong with it. And again, it's very difficult to take such an important
How
life.
Long is the movie?
2 hours.
It was 2 hours.
It was maybe a little less.
Well, that's a movie that could easily go 3.5 hours if
of
you wanted to.
Of course it is.
One of the greatest biographical movies of all time is Malcolm X.
Yes.
And in fact, and I read Alex Haley's book on Malcolm X before I saw the movie, and I was pretty well versed.
That was a Spike Lee movie, wasn't it?
That was a Spike Lee joint. Yeah. Spike Lee joint.
That's right.
It's a Spike
that's
Lee
right.
joint.
Just like Do the Right Thing.
That's right. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time. Why? Took its time. Mm-hmm. Take your time. Tell the story. Feel the story. You know, don't just throw everything out there from scene to scene. Just, I mean, I'm not trying to, God rest his soul, I'm not trying to be like Roger Ebert right now. But you know, take your time with the movie.
And
feel it.
Considering, Jay, how long a baseball game is, the movie could have been at least the length of a baseball game.
Yeah.
The thing is that there are
Why,
a lot of...
They're afraid. Marketing, they're afraid to do long movies anymore.
They're afraid
unless it's Lord of the Rings.
They're afraid to be controversial, Jay.
Jackie, how are you controversial when you're telling a story?
Jackie Robinson was a controversial character.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of paradoxes to Jackie Robinson and what made him up.
Yeah, well, what about Malcolm X?
Well, of course.
There's some controversy.
Of course.
And it created all kinds of controversy, but Spike Lee put it out anyway.
I would have loved to have seen Spike Lee make the Jackie Robinson movie.
Then you would have had yourself a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know who directed it, but it did not have that Spike Lee edge to it.
Dave?
Yeah.
Did you see a movie that they had done on Jackie Robinson and the Negro League? I saw it on TV. I don't remember what it was called. It's a couple of years back, and it did kind of take its time. It looked at it kind of differently. It looked at all of the players from the league, some who went on and did other things later.
No.
I'm going to see if I can check in, see if I can get the name for you.
Please do.
It kind of goes into the explanation of how he was chosen. It kind of looks at some of the other players who were jealous that he was the one who was chosen, who couldn't understand why he was the one who was chosen above them. In a sense, he wasn't. It wasn't an obvious choice. It wasn't like, this guy's going to be the one. It wasn't as obvious as that by the way it was portrayed in the movie. There's a lot of background to some of the other characters as well, too.
Well, there's so many stars in the Negro Leagues. I mean, you know,
yeah.
the stories we hear now about guys like Cool Papa Bell or Josh Gibson.
Yeah, like they cover all of those guys and see how they kind of grow up and how it kind of developed to the point where how he was chosen. It didn't deal so much with what he dealt with when he finally got majors, but kind of the background to the Negro League and how it developed and the kind of players who were available to them and the kind of jealousy that happened until some of the other guys made it into the league after, which is interesting because historically those kind of things you never really know
mm-hmm.
unless you can see it or you read about it. And with Jackie Robinson, it was like that too. So I still have respect for him. The way he was chosen, like you said, he has a little bit of history in the Army and whatnot. So I guess it kind of skewered their choice towards him. He's a safe choice.
But he was also a very controversial character.
I,
Jackie Robinson upset a lot of African Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
He testified against Paul Robeson at the HUAC committee, the McCarthyism trials,
yeah.
The witch hunts.
Yeah.
Robinson was a staunch Republican.
Yeah.
Who was a staunch Republican up through the Kennedy years and up until, was it Humphrey, I guess?
That will make you no friends in Black America.
Robinson said that he attended the 1968 Republican convention and realized what it felt like to be a Jew in Hitler's Germany.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Swear to God, that's
today,
a quote.
About the same today being
and I promise you, Mike, that did not make the movie.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Did not make the movie. The fact that he was so pro-Vietnam.
That's the juicy stuff we want to see, man. I don't want to see this guy sliding into second or getting spiked at. I mean, come on.
And that's the difference. Yeah, that's the difference between. I mean, that's childish stuff. It's almost like they're putting on a movie to put in a classroom to teach you, well, this is how it went. It's very simplistic, very childish.
I want the juicy stuff.
What Malcolm X had.
Like,
they had his connection with the Nation of Islam.
That's right.
When he became very extreme in his views, and they showed that. Later on, digressing a little bit, but at least they have the guts, the balls to show it in the movie.
Well, without that, you don't really have any idea who these guys really are. They're comic book characters, basically.
That's
well, and
right.
It's really easy to put people, you know, we talk about it all the time on this show, about putting professional athletes up on that pedestal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the Jackie Robinson story is so much more compelling when you know the whole story.
Yes. Yeah.
That he had the intelligence to be able to change his mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Jackie Robinson died, he was not the happiest person in the world. He saw a world that was very different. He could not understand the disaffectiveness of youth. He had a son that went to Vietnam. He was very pro-war. He was pro-Vietnam until his son came back a shadow of himself. And his son died of a drug overdose before Jackie Robinson passed away.
Is that in the movie?
No.
Come on.
Of course
man.
Not.
I can't
no.
see this. Of course, the movie ends in 1947.
Yeah.
Garbage, Dave. Come on. They could have done it.
It's not garbage. It's Hollywood, Mike.
Yeah, I guess.
It's Hollywood. In very big letters, right as the movie starts, this is based on a true story.
Loosely.
And it's not, well, it doesn't say loosely, but it's based on
it. It says that at the beginning of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, too, by the way.
Well, you know what's funny about that, actually? The director who directed 42, he directed L.A. Confidential, but he also directed Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Oh, good start.
The movie that you were referring to, Mike, is called Soul of the Game. It was a 1996 made-for-TV movie for HBO.
Yes.
Blair Underwood was Jackie Robinson.
That's right.
Delroy Lindo was Satchel Paige. McKelty Williamson as Josh Gilbert.
Good casting.
Harvey Williams as Cat Mays, the father of Willie Mays.
Mm.
The film depicts Paige and Gibson as the pitching and hitting stars, respectively, of the Negro Leagues in the period immediately following the Second World War. Robinson is an up-and-coming player on Satchel Paige's team, the Kansas City Monarchs.
Dave, that is to be seen.
You can thank Jimmy for finding it, and now I just got to find the movie and watch it.
Jimmy is gold as always.
Damn straight.
I don't know how you're going to find it. I'm sure I would have seen it at HBO at home. That's why I've seen it. If you've got Bell Vibe on demand, you may be able to go through it and find that.
No, I do have Bell Vibe, so I will definitely check around for that. I appreciate it, and I'd imagine this is much better than the... you ever seen the Jackie Robinson story?
Where he stars as himself?
Starring Jackie Robinson. There's a wonderful scene where, like, you know, a 40-year-old Jackie Robinson is playing the 17-year-old Jackie Robinson just getting home from UCLA, back with the family, and there's a scene with his brother, Mac. And that's another thing that didn't make the movie, actually. Mac Robinson came in second at the 36 Olympics to Jesse Owens.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I mean, this guy came from a real... Jackie Robinson could have been a star.
Anything.
He lettered, I think he was a four lettered. Four different sports he lettered in at UCLA.
Yeah.
It's, again, the guy...
Football,
it's
basketball.
A wonderful story.
Baseball and track.
Yeah. It was a huge honor that Jay and I got to interview his daughter last year during Black History Month.
Great.
And that show is in the archives at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. And that was a heck of a night. Marquise Delino and Sharon Robinson. That was pretty cool.
What's the name of that movie again, Dave?
Soul of the Game.
Soul of the Game, okay.
Write that down, Mike.
Yeah, I will.
Write it down, there, buddy.
I'm going to make sure I seek that out, too. And,
or send me a tweet, you know.
It's a different perspective, and I think maybe a more honest one. I mean, I guess it deals with a lot more of the stuff, the more less hero and more discomfort with the whole idea surrounding the first Black getting into baseball.
Well, that's HBO for you, right?
Yeah, they'll show you the details and they'll get in the corners, you know. But actually, I wanted to mention as well too, Dave, how was the game in Toronto in terms of not the game and being at a baseball stadium, just the fans and how things have been going so
okay
far?
Well, we get off the train on Thursday afternoon, and within 20 minutes I've seen 50 Blue Jays hats.
Wow.
And the rest of the weekend, I mean, I've never seen it like that before. The whole city seems to be caught up in the Blue Jays madness. And that was an incredible thing to witness. You know, last time I went to Toronto, any other time I've gone to Toronto, you see Yankees hats. You see Dodgers hats. You see Marlins hats. You see Expos hats. Didn't see any of that this time around. I was the only person. I wore my Mets hat to the game on Saturday and on Sunday. And I was the only person in the building not in a Blue Jays cap. Save for a couple of Red Sox fans.
As an Expo fan, I just have to tell you, I don't know what you're doing with a Mets hat, but that's besides the point.
I bought it last year.
He's
when I
weird
was...
that way. He wears all kinds of... I don't know why. He's a weird guy.
It's a fashion thing, okay?
Yeah, I know. And I know you're a big Dickey fan there, so...
I like Dickey. I like what he means.
Yeah.
I like what he stands for. I think he's I think he's everything that's right about baseball.
Yeah, he seems like an actual, like, legitimate human being who's playing baseball, not one of these lunatics.
Which is refreshing. And,
yeah.
And why one of the reasons that it was very difficult to see the fans treating him as rough as they were on Sunday. And it was a smattering of boos, but it was more just the downtrodden nature of the fans. And Saturday was great, okay? Jay Happ threw a one-hitter through six innings.
Yep.
Jays blanked the Red Sox. The Red Sox had two hits. Everything that Saturday was, Sunday wasn't.
Yeah.
But that's why they play 162.
Well, you know what? I guess looking at it from the outside and just the way the fans have reacted, I mean, they're kind of where the Montreal Canadiens have been the last 10 years, not in terms of what they're expecting, but the marketing department and what's actually going on the field or on the surface of the ice can be two very different things. And I guess the danger is you have to manage expectations somehow. I mean, things have been pumped up, and I don't think it's by their doing. I mean, they went out to get better, and I'm not sure what the fans were expecting. I don't know if they were expecting a 162-game run, you know? I mean...
Well, yes, they were, and unfortunately, that's because of Rogers. That's because of I asked Alex Anthopoulos about that, about the hype and the machine.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of people out there who were thinking, yeah, 162-0.
Yeah.
Win the first three in the wild card round, win the next four, and then sweep the World Series.
It's baseball.
And it's that easy, and it's not that easy.
Not easy. I mean, manage expectations. I mean, the nice thing about it, and the best thing for them is, regardless of what happens, they're going to sell a lot of tickets this year, provided they can at least stay interesting and don't totally go downhill.
Right.
And I'm sure the marketing department is pushing it like they've never pushed before.
They are, and it's everywhere.
I mean, you should
have seen the... you know when you go to a Habs game and everybody's in Habs colors nowadays?
Yeah. Mm.
This is the first time I'd ever seen that at a baseball game.
Wow.
It was...
I noticed that, too, when I saw it on TV.
Getting off the subway at Union Station and that 15-minute walk along Front Street and then down Blue Jay Way, and just the teeming masses of people, everybody in the 43 for Dickey or the 7 for Reyes, and... It was just impressive to see. I even saw an Escobar jersey. I couldn't believe it.
I mean, good on them. I mean, they're going to try. And, you know, from what I saw this past weekend, it's going to be hard to separate yourself from the other teams in that division, as always.
As Anthopoulos said, it's a coin flip.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great interview. And I thought, you know, the thing about him coming on with you, Dave, I guess, I don't know if it's maybe because it's out of his own personal Toronto market, but he's very honest. And well-versed, and I think more than anything, he understands the dangers and the pitfalls of what could happen. And I'm not sure if his level of what he expects to have happen is the same as the fans and the team. I think he's more realistic. I mean, he went out and did what he could, and the results will be what they'll be.
He has to be honest when he's on with me. His family's listening. His friends from high school are listening.
Yeah,
they're going to call him on the BS if he isn't.
Yeah, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to BS you about what's happening, you know.
We'll call it the Kaufman Show advantage.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, it is. I mean, it's truthful. It's late night, and, you know, like you said, he just got off the plane. And like you said, after he was driving around in his convertible Porsche.
Yeah, right.
It was like -4, too. I don't know.
He's good at the top, eh?
Yeah. Typical Greek.
Mike, I just sent you a tweet with, I think it's the preview of Soul of the Game.
I'm going to hunt it down again and watch it again.
Awesome.
It's worth taking a look for anybody who's listening right now.
I like the cast.
Seriously, the cast is incredible.
Cool. You'll enjoy it. There's some really good moments in there.
I'll try and hunt it down this week.
Yeah, for sure, guys.
And in the meantime, when you see 24, I would love to talk to you about it in further detail.
24?
Sorry, 42.
24.
24, 42.
I thought you were going to say 24-48.
No, we've hit the dyslexic hour.
Kiefer Sutherland is Jackie Robinson.
Oh, my God. Tommy Douglas is rolling over in his grave. And I will say this, though. I watched 42 last week, and a few days before, you were talking about HBO documentaries, I watched 41, which is the documentary on George Bush Sr., the 41st president.
Yeah, there's just so much math going on
right now.
Which
just made 42 so misleading.
Yes,
I'm telling
you. It really does, doesn't it?
What did you think of 41?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic.
I thought it was. You know, they can take someone you don't really like, and then after you're like, I like that guy. And that's the magic
of HBO. Scary, isn't it?
That's the magic of HBO.
You know what, though? I mean, maybe I was too young and naive at the time when he was president, but I never hated him.
No.
He always seemed like a gentleman to me.
Yeah.
His son is a very different, cut from a very different cloth.
Yeah.
George Bush Sr., he had a certain charm, and you see it in the way that him and Bill Clinton.
He didn't have enough time to screw it up as bad as his son did. He's a one-termer.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And God bless Ross Perot, or Bill Clinton would have never been president.
That's right. 41 has a sordid history, though. His ties.
Well, the CIA stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he kind of smirks when they talk about that. You know, the little smirk on his face, like, yeah, I killed a few South American dictators, but I'm not going to talk to you about it.
The question is, did he have anything to do with Kennedy? Oh my God, this is turning into Art Bell.
Where are we going here? Where are we going?
This.
Yeah, it's turning into Art Bell.
And we won't end it there.
Yeah, we've got Mike east of the Rockies on.
The ant people have attacked me.
You keep wearing that tinfoil, Mike.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks so much.
Have a good evening.
Speak to you next week.
Okay, bye.
And on that note, I think we're going to wrap up another edition of The Kaufman Show. And boy, this was a fun one tonight. I want to thank our guests. Noah Pransky, Tampa Bay investigative journalist. That was a fascinating conversation. The coach, Pete Yiannopoulos. Eric Thomas, ATL to MTL. And Torben Rolfson, the van guy. Jay, thanks, buddy.
Thank you. We did receive a call.
Did we?
While we were on the air with somebody else, just reminding us to wish Gary Carter a happy birthday from yesterday.
Happy birthday, kid. We miss you.
Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. You saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. Davey and me face down in our soup, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at the tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next Monday night.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?